This is Amber Rolt reporting for the EG from MAPIC 2017. And this afternoon I am joined with the Chief Executive Officer of Time Out Markets, Didier Souya. Didier, thank you very much for joining the EG this afternoon.
Well, thanks for having me today.
Tell me a little bit about your MAPIC experience. How's it going so far?
It's been wonderful. It's my first time here and I think it's been absolutely beyond expectations. I haven't had lunch nor today nor yesterday. And for a food guy, this is quite rare because there's so many people to meet, so many shows to see, and it's been great. Really, really enjoying it.
And you've been at Time Out Market for just over a year now. Could you just bring me up to the speed with the business and how everything's going?
Sure. So it'll be, I joined in February, so nearly 2 years ago, getting there, getting close. And yes, we, you know, we have one market that opened in 2014 in Lisbon, Time Out Market, Mercado de Ribera, that has been very successful so far. And we just clocked in 3.1 million visitors last year. So yeah, really happy about that level. And I think in the half year result, we announced 1.7 million. So you don't just do the math and you'll probably see where we're ended up this year in terms of footfall. And since then, we've announced London, subject to planning permission, as you probably read or are aware. The planners had recommended us for planning approval, which was declined by the planning committee, and we have now appealed that decision. So that will take the time it takes to, you know. We have also announced Porto, which will probably be ready to open at some point in the middle of next year. We've also announced Miami, which is our first store in market in the USA, and that's we've announced it for 2018. Great location in South Beach, a place where people work, people live, people go to. So I got people living there, tourists going there. Great location. We've also announced Boston about a bit more than a month ago, also in Fenway Park, great location there, in the Landmark Center. So I can say it's progressing well. We've got a lot of new markets to look forward to.
Do you have a set figure on the expansion plans? How many do you want to have over, the next 5 years?
We announced at the moment of the IPO that we would have five markets opening within 5 years, so we'll be perfectly on track to achieve that.
And following the success of the market in Lisbon and your upcoming ventures in Miami, do you think that this is a concept that can work globally?
In some cities, yes, it can work globally, absolutely. You do need major cities to make it work. You know, chefs do not live on only Friday, Saturday, Sunday trade. They need to live, our partners, which are our chefs, need to be busy from Monday lunch to Sunday dinner. Therefore, you need areas where people live, where people work and tourists go, and you need a certain amount of footfall, a big amount of footfall. We create footfall, there's no doubt, but we don't create it all. So major cities, yes. I can't tell you how many, possibly, but you know, every foodie city that has quite a substantial population is interesting for us, obviously. But it has to be a foodie city.
What That's do you mean?
Foodie city, a lot of restaurants, a lot of upcoming chefs, people being interested in foods, a lot of prospect growth, and people generally wanted to discover and create in the food business. That interests us. So I'm not going to name any city which is not foodie. Everybody eats. We know that for a fact. But there are trends and there are cities which are more foodies than others.
And can you bring me up to speed with the latest developments of your London site? So that, you know, that is, you know, that you have recommended to appeal. What's the progress there? What sort of timescale do you think we're looking at?
The process you got to follow the process, right? You have a few residents that go up in arms. The planning committee has decided to follow their recommendation against the advice of their planners. So we have lodged an appeal with the landlord help, advice, and support. We have pretty good QC on board that thinks our chances of success are pretty substantial. We will follow the guidelines. So it takes time in this city, unfortunately. I think it does slow down investment, knowing that you have to spend an enormous amount of money to get to the stage where you present the planning, because you've done your diligence, you've done your design, you've done your D&D, really, to make sure that you've covered every single angle, to make sure the planners are completely happy with what you've done. And then, it just declined for whatever particular reason. So, how long it will take? Whatever the process takes, logically speaking, we won't be heard till probably early summer of 2018. That's for the planning. Then afterwards, you gotta go to license, which possibly again will be declined, and then you will appeal again. And then, so it takes a serious amount of time, resources, and money, when actually all we're trying to do here is bring something to the environment, to the local, to the locals, create 200 jobs, make a substantial investment at a time of Brexit where there's a lot of uncertainty. I must say, a lot of question marks.
And can you just talk me through what it is about the London site that made you choose it, and what it is exactly that you're looking for in a site for one of your markets?
It's opposite Spitalfields Market. Great footfall, great environment. We've used a space that used to be an old stable, so that's got a lot of character. And a lot of character is very important for us. So we, in the refit, the plan was really to keep it, the integrity of the building. And tourists go to this area. The people working in the markets were looking very much forward to us coming here and create even more footfall in this environment. But the building has a lot of character, and this is really, really key. It's a very good development. There's a lot of new businesses and offices opening there that need to eat.
And how big is that site in square feet?
It's 20,000 square feet, and that's roughly, to answer your question, that's roughly the minimum amount of space that we do need.
What's the biggest size that you can go up to?
Well, we obviously have nearly 70,000 square feet in Lisbon. I mean, it's a one-off. How often do you find a space in the center of the city with a market attached to it? It's a beautiful space. 45,000 square feet ground floor, 25,000 on the upper floors, around 70,000 global, 850 seats, probably 49 food offers in general. It's huge. And you definitely, you know, if you ask me, are you going to open in Tokyo and find that amount of space? Impossible. You know, so you got to be realistic. And I think a 400-seater space in 20,000 square feet is good.
Can you talk me through your relationships that you have with landlords? How does it work with regards to a lease structure with them? And then in turn, what benefits do you bring to them and indeed the wider area with your markets?
Well, we work with many landlords, and most of them and all of them have showed significant love, which is really nice as a tenant to feel love from the landlord. Because we do bring, first, a big investment in their space, a lot of capex in the space, versus an office concept. We bring a lot of footfall. Think about the 3.1 million customers in Lisbon last year. So we don't generate all the footfall, but we do bring a lot. So for the regeneration of an area, we're kind of a key anchor store, anchor tenant. We're replacing, to a certain extent, the department stores that used to be the anchors of malls. Area in Lisbon used to be the red light district, used to be a really rundown area. Now it's one of the most sought after spaces areas in the city. So landlords, different kind of landlords contact us. Usually landlords don't want to redevelop an entire scheme with office tenants. with not only offices but amenities, and we're one of those amenities. And that anchor, bringing the footfall there, bringing quality to the space as well, because we are bringing Michelin star chef, we are bringing quality chef, we're bringing the best of, makes that the landlord usually can make a bit more money with everybody else. I'm not saying they cut us very, very good deals, but they cut us good deals. Their understanding of the amount of time, money we're going to spend to open this, so the TIs are pretty good. The rent-free periods are pretty good, and we really work hand in hand with the partners.
And typically, what kind of lease length do you look for?
As long as possible. 10 years minimum, plus five, be great.
And then with the traders and the restaurants that you have on site, does that work on a more flexible sublet basis?
Flexible is the key word. These days, food and beverage, what the customer wants, you gotta be flexible. I think gone are the days where you have to start signing up guys for 5 years and 10 years of a food concept. Trends move. You need to keep the pulse of the city. We actually offer our partners, chefs, 1 year in the spaces we have to offer. 1 year. But you gotta understand, we have to make it easy for them. They're quality chefs. They're not gonna start doing proper model of a department store of paying a introduction fee, a minimum fee, a marketing fee, a minimum per square foot, a whole capex. They can't. They don't have time to worry about all this and go to the bank every time. So what we offer them is, come in here, we'll fit out everything for you, the kitchen will be ready. All we're asking you is to come up with an order taker, two chefs, pots and pans, and cook six dishes of your menu that you really want to cook. And the rest we'll take care of. So they don't have this financial burden on their heads. They can leave after a certain give us 3 months' notice, they can move on. They're not happy. At the same time, they continue being good. That's partnership, they'll continue staying. But somebody falls off the radar, not relevant anymore, becomes a bit sloppy. We're not gonna be having this pain for the next 3 or 5 years. And we have enough space to be able to bring the new concept around, the new kid on the block that needs a space to express himself without having to pay extreme rents, increase, like in London, increase rents, increase rates, increase payroll costs, increase everything. So we make it easier for them to give them a template, a footprint to try something else.
And following the planning appeal that you're going through currently on your site in London, would you say that some of the laws and potential constraints around planning are perhaps one of the biggest challenges that you face when you're trying to find your sites?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And we've all overcome this in the US, actually, where we now have the landlords going and get planning for us. They are making sure that they get planning for us for a food hall, food court, entertainment center on our behalf. They understand how crucial it is. And they also understand that they can't be waiting for us for an appeal and all this before opening. So they go and get it for us. And the landlord is really, really paying more. In the US, that's the way it is. And I think in the UK, landlords are gonna have to move in that way as well to secure the tenant that they'll be able to trade.
And in addition to planning, we've just touched briefly on rates in the UK, the fall in sterling. You know, these are some of the headwinds that the restaurant and F&B sector is facing at the moment. How do you make sure that you're prepared for these headwinds as and when they come?
Actually, we're a great solution to all those problems, because the tenants that are facing all those hikes, they know that in an environment like us, like ours, their overheads are much lower. Their risk is much lower. So they can actually start new concept with us, with their peers, with their friends, working together, because we have between 15 and 25 tenants and chefs in the same environment. So security is there. So we are one of those answers to this problem.
And in the market, in the UK, and also globally as well, Who would you view as being some of your competitors?
Well, I mean, Italy is great. I think they're doing a fantastic job globally, rolling out their Italian concept, and they are the best of Italy, and we do the best of the city. So we're quite different. They cannot kind of go with malls. We've time to go on our own in iconic buildings, iconic locations. You got very strong street food operators in London, and we're not doing street food. Nothing wrong against it, on the contrary, I think it's great. We are much more food-led concept, with a mix that represents the best of city. So you have in Italy, in very strong in Italy and Spain, Mercado de Ribera, Mercado San Miguel in Madrid is fantastic. You got a great concept in Barcelona. They are globally with that, they're not really expanding yet. So for the moment, between Italy and us, I think there's the two only brands which are trying to expand on a global footprint.
Do you think that your business model, do you think that you could position yourself to be the future anchor tenant for retail-led developments instead of a department store?
Absolutely.
And with the struggles of you know, the retail model at the moment, do you think that the extra footfall and dwell time that passes by from your restaurants and markets could generate, do you think that that could perhaps help retail developers?
Yes, but not only. You know, I've looked at a new retail development in Brickell City Centre in Miami, which I think is absolutely fantastic. Because, yes, there is an anchor food hall that's going to open soon, Italian anchor food hall. There is condominiums on that mall. There are this anchor hotel. WeWork is there. And there's great restaurants as well. And, of course, there are retailers. But suddenly that mixed redevelopment makes this not really a mall environment or department store environment. Everything is there to live it, to work it, to sleep in it. And that, I think, in my view, is the future of retail as we know it. So yeah, we're part of that development, but we're not the only component, come on.
What do you think the biggest challenges are that the hospitality sector is facing in general at the moment?
Well, in the UK, it's gonna be people. That's for sure. Quality people are not coming to the UK anymore because they're not gonna be able to stay. The pound is down, so you don't come and because you don't bring any, there's no point in sending money home. So that hospitality sector, everybody's talking about it, it's not news, it's gonna be a big struggle in the next couple of years. But the hospitality sector is very flexible, listens to its customer very well, and so far, in 1,000 years, have always found a way to solve this problem and found a solution to it.
And you've been in the business for a very long time, and previously your role at Hakkasan Group, you oversaw the expansion of the business from 3 restaurants to 35, is that correct?
I think it was, across different brands, yes.
What was your main strategy then in order to oversee that expansion and to make sure that it was successful?
Right locations, right landlords, right partners, and the main thing was making sure the brand remains true to itself wherever it goes and takes a little bit of the local environment to fit. And that's exactly the same thing we do with Time Out Market. We don't reinvent the wheel. We're opening, we use local marble in Lisbon. We're using pink terrazzo in Miami. It makes sense. You enter a market, wherever it is, you know it will be a Time Out Market. You enter a Hakkasan, anywhere in the world, you know it's a Hakkasan. Wherever it is.
I think within the restaurant market, particularly in the UK, some of the chains and brands that have been struggling recently, some of which even have gone insolvent, are those that fall within the casual dining bracket, many of which have suffered because they've expanded their businesses too quickly. Looking forward, do you think that other brands may suffer, or within the hospitality sector, which subsectors in particular do you think are most at risk?
Yeah, now I think the luxury sector has no problem as long as they remain qualitatively and offer quality and, I'm not saying value for money, but it's an experience that you pay for, it's fine. And the lower end, no problem either. Everybody in the middle, struggling and will struggle if they don't differentiate. There's a lot of people on that, in that mid-market segment, in this casual casual segment.
Why is it harder for those in the mid-market?
On this average spend there, around 20, 25 euros or pounds or dollars, roughly. There's a lot of people around this area. Now, you can eat for 10 or 12 in fast food. You can eat for 60 and above on the luxury market. But in that mid-segment there, it's getting very, very busy. And the average spend is not high enough, possibly, to support the tax raise, the rate increases, all the margin going down, and the payroll going up.
How do you think the role of tech and digital platforms are going to affect the restaurant industry moving forwards?
Very positively. You need tech. I think you need a digital to make your physical better and to get a better impact. An example, Tangmao's digital reach globally on a monthly basis, 252 million users. How do you think that does for the markets? Wonders. It's an incredible marketing platform. So data, I didn't invent it, it's the new currency. That's why people write everywhere. And it's true. Without that media platform and that reach, I wouldn't be opening markets.
And finally, are there any emerging brands or concepts or businesses over the past year that particularly caught your eye?
Everywhere in London now is small restaurants with or without reservations, countertops, 3-4 chefs in the back, 3 waiters in the front, limited staffing, limited menu, high quality, the death of the white tablecloths. Pretty simple. And this is what's popping up everywhere. With a second world Soho shortage, that's where people want to go now. In Kiln, for example. Cricket, another example. So I think this is the way it's going, because that's the way people are going to be able, operators, to answer the staff shortage, the increased payroll, and so forth, having limited menu, but really, really high quality.
Thank you very much for taking the time to speak to the EG, and I hope you enjoy the rest of MAPIC.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great.